Welcome to the Metal Pit Podcast. This is where we dig deep into the riffs, the legends, and the chaos that make heavy metal what it is today. You can check out our latest reviews, Metal Maiden of the Month, interviews, and more at our website at www.themetalpit.org. Stay connected with us on Instagram and Facebook at The Metal Pit and at The Metal Pit Podcast. And visit our YouTube channel at The Metal Pit 666. If you have any album suggestions or maybe you want to be a guest on an episode, email us podcast@themetalpit.org. Please rate and review us. Here we go, The Metal Pit Podcast. And I'm here. This is our first episode of season 4 of the Metal Pit Podcast, but we're going to recap the year 2025 in heavy metal. And I got two of the writers from the Metal Pit. I got John and Eric, both from the big old USA. How are you guys today?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Yeah, appreciate it, Blake.
To eventually do our top 10s. Okay, I'm going to do the Metal Pit's top 10 metal albums of 2025. And Eric and John are going to give me their top 10s also of 2025. I didn't make a top list for myself just because I was so busy doing the other stuff. So we're going to recap some of the things from the year, maybe talk about things that are coming out next year, if anybody has any thoughts on that. And so I'm going to start with, we're going to go back to, where's the date? July 5th, we had a concert in Birmingham, England called Black Sabbath's Final Stand, which was the first time in, I don't know how many years, but the original four members of Black Sabbath shared the stage for a final goodbye to the Sabbath legacy. And of course, we saw Ozzy Osbourne. I guess we can do the Ozzy Osbourne thing right now, too. Of course, how long, where is that? I know Ozzy passed away 17 days after that concert.
Yeah, so it was like 2 weeks after.
I know Eric streamed this, bought this, and streamed it. I don't know if John, did you see this or maybe just watch clips from other people? But
I've seen clips, yeah.
On the concert and on Ozzy passing and that stuff. Even though I know you already did a podcast on Ozzy, so we don't have to go into great detail. We can go back to that, but just comment on the thing. So, John, you want to go first? If you saw anything?
I just saw clips of the show. I was really busy with work and whatnot at the time and haven't really gone back to revisit it. But it was cool because it was nice to be a part of something that's just such a worldwide phenomenon and something that we could all relate to and be a part of, but yet was so much bigger than each and every one of us. Metal wouldn't be what it is without Ozzy and without Black Sabbath.
Unfortunately, amen.
As it is with Ozzy passing, we also lost Black Sabbath too, because we'll never see that lineup ever again. It's unfortunate, but in a way it's cool just to be a part of history like that.
And Eric, you purchased the stream, didn't you? I'm not sure how much, if you watched it all or not.
I did. I purchased it and they didn't have anything in the fine print, so I didn't purchase it in the morning. I'm thinking it started at noontime. It's been a little while, but I purchased it. I had plans that day, so I purchased it in the afternoon and only got 3 songs. I paid like $30 for 3 songs. So that hurt my, trust me, that hurt me in more ways than one. But from what I saw, I really enjoyed it. It was a little bit strange. I had to take pause because Ozzy was like sitting in a throne. He wasn't up moving around. So that was a little bit of shock and awe, if you will. But man, Ozzy still sounded so good. He looked pretty good up there, but he sounded great. He talked to the audience some. You know how he is live talking. He's just all over the place, but we know why, of course. But he sounded great. The guys were awesome. I wish I would have seen the whole stream. It's actually coming out in 2026 on DVD, and I'll either get it on like a Blu-ray 4K, or I'll just get it on Amazon and get the digital download. But I did see, I'm trying to think, I don't know if you caught this, John or Blake, but they did a cover of, who was singing it? They did a cover of Bark at the Moon, and I was really impressed. I was never an extreme fan, but Nuno Bettencourt did a hell of a job. That's a great solo by Jake E. Lee, and the Bark at the Moon cover was pretty nice. That's one that stood out. I'm sure I'll remember by the end of the podcast who the singer was, but Yeah, I saw that clip come across. John and I have talked about the Halford and War Pigs, and oh, that one's so good. I downloaded that on Spotify, man. Halford sounds so good. It came on Ozzy's Boneyard about a month ago, and I was like, yep, I need to listen to this. So I cranked it up. Halford's another one of these Birmingham cats, and he was just nailing it. I loved it, man. He just had that spirit. Him and Ozzy are like kindred spirits. So that was pretty awesome. I saw that, and I've heard that. And yeah, Ozzy's just, I can't really add to what John said. He said it so eloquently. Without Ozzy, there isn't metal. There's, you know, Ozzy's one of a kind. I just started reading I Am Ozzy, his autobiography. But yeah, he had a pretty difficult upbringing. There were six little Osbournes, so they had to scrap and claw to get any kind of food. So it's just interesting just kind of seeing, and he hated school and had a hard time, but he just didn't realize he'd be able to get into music. And then he listened to the Beatles, and I guess that's another conversation. But yeah, Ozzy's, man, it's just such an inspiration to like most of my favorite artists out there, and certainly to me. Every time I've seen him live, he had this aura about him. And I know that's what the kids are saying, aura, but he had this glow. You can see he's generally caring about the audience. How are you doing? He's doing a silly clap thing up in the air, or he's just clapping his hands, and the fans are just going ape shit. And I love that. And as John said, we'll never see that again. And then just thinking a little bit forward, we will never have another Black Sabbath album too. So that's disappointing. That's a little bit dejecting. But he definitely left his mark, both as a solo artist and with the Almighty Sabbath.
And that was Tobias Forge from Ghost, who is the singer you're talking about.
That's who it was, yeah. Yep, and that makes sense because I'm not a huge Ghost fan, but I was like, you know what? He did a pretty nice job. But what stood out was that Nuno just absolutely destroyed that solo. That's a pretty tricky one, and yeah, that was cool. Yep, you're right, Blake, that's who it was.
There was a lot of groups there. I didn't make a note of this or anything. I know Metallica was there, and I think Lamb of God, I don't know. And
Mastodon was there.
Yeah, and I know Jack Black did a cover of I don't know if he was there or if it was just on video, but Jack Black did Mr. Crowley, and I thought that was pretty good because I didn't see that on YouTube.
I gotta look for that.
His version of nice. Crowley, because he was a metal guy there, Jack Black. Okay, and I guess that's all we need. This okay. And we did, let's see, Iron Maiden's 50th anniversary tour, the Run for Your Lives tour, which kicked off in May. Now, is that the one you're going to? Is that the same one you're going to?
It is. That's the one I'm catching here in Virginia in September, man. It's a ways off. That's the only downside. You pay this money for the ticket, then you got to wait and wait. But it's on a Friday night. I'm all set, man. Cannot wait. Ready to tailgate. Not sure which Maiden shirt I'll bust out. I got plenty of them, but I'll be ready.
And I guess they're focusing heavily on their early material. I don't really know. I haven't seen any.
Correct. It's Iron. I haven't looked at the set list. I think I'm one of the few these days that looks. I don't like spoilers of any kind, whether it's music, whether it's streaming, Netflix shows, whatever it might be. But I do know that it's from the first album, the debut album, through Somewhere in Time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty jacked up.
So that's just the first five studio albums.
Yeah. And I can't remember if it's Don Jameson, not Don Jameson, but there was somebody that was talking about, oh no, I'm sorry. It's Eddie Trunk. I got to get my names right, but Eddie Trunk. And I read this a while ago, so bear with me, but they actually said the first four albums, we had a cat sighting. The first four albums are heavily represented. So I'm excited about that.
Because I did see them, I don't know what year it was, but they did a tour where they only played songs from the first four albums.
Yes.
I really liked that one.
Yeah, was that like four or 5 years ago? Yeah.
At least, yeah. I think it's been more than that.
Easily. But could be, yeah.
Whatever. Okay, and let's see. This could be I think he's already said it is. Dave Mustaine says the next Megadeth album is the last Megadeth album.
Yes, this is
on a farewell tour, which hopefully is really his farewell tour, and he didn't come back in 5 years and do another one.
Oh, yeah. AKA Rolling Stones, or who's still on the Aerosmith.
Even Slayer is still playing, even though they said they're done.
You're right.
Kiss, of course, has a new one every year.
Oh, my God.
And I know that, so there, we got a Megadeth. I think I might have it down in my notes. Maybe I don't. But I know there's a Megadeth album coming out this year, Eric. I know you know that. Hopefully we're going to get it early. I don't know.
Yeah. Awesome. So they have a new album coming January 26th. I think January 26th sounds right. But yeah.
Okay, then I'm probably not going to get it early. I don't know. I should message somebody and see. But anyway, and I guess I didn't make a note of that. I guess he's doing a re-recording of Ride the Lightning. Just because
that's still, what I don't like.
He's still that, bitter that he's not as big as Metallica. So he's
doing, you know what? I don't know if you were, hey Blake, I don't know if you or John caught this. So I read an interview on one of the websites. I don't want to plug them because the Metal Pit's the best. But anyway, Dave Mustaine said that he chose to record Ride the Lightning to honor his time and to honor Metallica. And I don't love the idea. I got to say this, man. This is one thing I feel strongly about. Don't mess with a perfect song. Just leave it the way it is. You have your mechanics. They have the Four Horsemen. That's fine. You contributed plenty with Metallica. I don't love the idea. Personally, I'd rather them just do one more original song. I like the three singles that they've released. I don't think any of them are game changers, but I like what they've released. They're actually opening for Maiden. I was a little bit upset that Anthrax isn't going to be on the Lega tour that's coming to Virginia. I was a bit upset about that, but Megadeth will play longer, so it should be cool.
Oops, sorry about that.
So it's January 23rd is Megadeth's release.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess we're probably
looking at it right now.
It's copy then, but anyway.
Fingers are crossed.
After it comes out or whatever.
Awesome. Appreciate that.
I don't really like the Ride the Lightning thing either, because it sounds like he, even though he says that about, I think it's just his bitterness that he's not big as Metallica.
Think you're spot on.
And he wants to make sure people know he wrote the riff for that song or whatever. But I could be wrong. Who knows? Okay. Sure. Did you want to add, John? I don't know if you like Megadeth. Did you want to add anything?
I haven't listened to anything Megadave recorded since Countdown, which I thought was just as a commercially viable radio rock album, I guess it's okay. But
Ashes in Your Mouth?
Nah, man.
And really, the music on Ashes in Your Mouth? All right, man, I got some doubts about you, brother. Oh, that's,
none of it.
That's a hell of an epic.
First of all, now hear me out. They set the bar unrealistically high with Rest in Peace, which I feel.
I'm with you.
To this day, I say it's a generational album. The guitar work, especially, is phenomenal. And I understand Dave went a more mainstream commercial route, a la Metallica's self-titled album, to try to expand to a broader audience. I get it. But to me, musically, they just, come on, man. Insomnia, omnia, 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 omnia. By the time they got to that crap, it was just like, nah, man, I can't do this. You know, I mean,
no Captive Honor.
No.
What's the other one? This Is My Life. Oh, I love that riff. It's just, it's so in your face. And
Stupid.
But yes, Mega Dave it is, though. That's why he's been through 10 million guitars, because it's Mega Dave. But
yeah, obviously the man's attitude. He said a lot of inflammatory remarks to the media over the years and whatnot. I guess trying to stay relevant, controversy breeds success or whatever. But yeah, I haven't, from Countdown on, I haven't listened to them other than a song here or there, which never really impressed me, especially considering everything up to and including Rust in Peace was so damn good. So yeah, whatever. It is what it is. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I don't listen to them. I just listen to the first three or four Megadeth albums. If I listen to anything of them, I just never really got into their later stuff, even though I'm sure there's some good stuff in there. Okay, let's see. If you have any other stories that you want to throw in, go ahead and do it. But I'm just going to go to, let's see here. There was a few singing changes. I guess Mastodon, who I don't listen to, but longtime guitarist, vocalist, Brent Hinds, parted ways with the group. And so I guess they got a new singer. I don't know if they have they had a new album with this new singer. I don't know, Eric.
He passed away in a motorcycle accident.
Oh,
yeah. Well, it's days after that happened.
Pretty tragic. Yeah, they had an ugly falling out. I saw something on Instagram, and Brent said something about, these guys lied to me. They weren't true. They treated me like shit. So it sounded like, I felt bad for the whole band because it sounded like it got really ugly. And he's one of the founding members, as Blake said, and a really talented guy, man. He's got a cool voice, really got his own style on the guitar. But yeah, it sucks how all that turned out. I did see some blurb about them having another guitarist step in. They've always had, not always, but for the last at least four albums, they've had like three of them have sang. So I am curious to see how they approach the vocal aspects of it. But they don't have a new album just yet, Blake.
Okay. And let's see. Exodus says they parted ways with Steve Zetrozusa. And I think I looked on Wikipedia, and that was back in February. I guess I never heard it. And Rob Dukes, who this is his third time in Exodus, and he is back
again.
And I think they're working on a new album. And I'd have to go back. I'm assuming Rob Dukes, I don't know how many albums he was on or not.
Not sure.
I know. I like the ones with Steve Zusu a lot, the best.
Yep. I'm a big fan of Steve. Oh, yep. Man. He's got that gravelly kind of nasally and a voice. Yeah. It fit Exodus in my opinion.
But I think he's still, according to Wikipedia, which is, depends on who's, I don't know who's posting it, so how true everything is.
But it's a coin flip. Some
drinking problems again or something.
Oh, man.
But he was okay. He said he thinks it's good that he's out too or something. So I don't know. But anyway, so I think Exodus is working on a new album. What else do we got? Sabotage. They played their first show in nearly a decade at the Monsters of Rock in Brazil, fueling rumors of a full-scale comeback in 2026, but I think they are. Last time I heard, they were going to make a new album, but you never know because everybody's getting older. You never know with health and stuff like that. But Eric,
that's true. Hey, Blake, I thought I shared this with you. I'm going to say it was like early fall. I saw a video on YouTube and a YouTuber had interviewed Chris Caffrey and he said that they were shooting for 2026. They said it depended on John Oliver. They call him the Mountain King. They said, depends on how his health is. He's got some health issues. John said his quote to Chris was, I'm going to do this album. You guys record the music, but I'm going to lay down the vocals. Yeah. Eagerly awaiting. We'll see how long the wait is, but they're going to have Zach Stevens. They're going to have a couple different vocalists. So I'm not sure how many guitarists are going to be on there, but I'm pretty excited. We'll have to wait and see, I suppose.
We had an interview with Chris Cafferty, on our YouTube channel, but it was more about his solo album.
Yeah, that was a good interview. Yeah.
He did bring up, I think, Sabotage too. Okay. Does anybody like Biohazard on here?
Nope.
Okay, I just know that the classic lineup came back and they made a new album or something. But that's
they're hit or miss with me. Very hit or miss. The songs that I like, I really do. And then there's just other ones that just aren't really my thing.
And I don't know. Let's see. What else do I got here? Oh, Arch Enemy. I was going to mention that. I know Eric's not a big fan. I'm not sure about John. But Alyssa White Gluse, singer of Arch Enemy, left the band. To go solo.
I did see that headline. Yeah, I saw the headline.
To go solo, which was a shock to everybody in that melodic death metal Arch Enemy thing. But I don't think they've named a new singer yet. Arch Enemy, that is. I am hoping it's the former singer, Angela Gasso, because she's still the manager of the band, and she's hinted at getting back into singing.
Angela's got a lot of health issues, from what I understand, though, which had led to her stepping out initially. So as much as I would like that, because I'm an Angela fan myself, as much as I would like that, I don't see it happening, but you never know.
Yeah, but I don't think there's been any announcement yet. There's been people have posted, oh, here's the new singer of Arch Enemy, but they're not saying that. So people are just making stuff up to get hits on YouTube or what.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not
clickbait.
Gonna say anything
until
Let's see here. Maybe we'll. Is anything okay? I did that. Oh, another person that passed away this year was John Sykes, who was big in Whitesnake, Thin Lizzy, Blue Murder, Whitesnake. Yeah, he was on my favorite Thin Lizzy album, Thunder and Lightning. And I forget, he was on the Slide It In album by Whitesnake, I believe, which is my favorite Whitesnake album. But anyway,
he was also on Whitesnake. Yeah, there's crazy harmonics on Crying in the Rain. Oh my goodness. Yeah, there's some slick guitar playing on that album. Yeah, it's more radio friendly, but there's still some stellar guitar soloing on there, and that's compliments of Sykes. He always had a great tone too. I bumped into this guy, it was a funny thing, but I went up to Columbia, Maryland to catch Maiden. I remember it was the last day of school, so I scootered out of school and went, threw my Maiden shirt on at Starbucks, got myself some afternoon boost, got the diesel going, went up there. I just started hitting it off, just chatting with this dude, and he was hilarious because he wouldn't stop talking about Sykes, and I was like, all right, I know he played with Whitesnake and stuff. He's you don't understand his tone. He had the best tone. And I listened to a little bit of Whitesnake after we had talked about it. And I was like, yeah, his tone is pretty underrated. He was a big Les Paul guy. And I'm not the biggest Gibson fan. A lot of artists that I grew up listening to played Les Pauls. And his tone is, man, it was pretty impressive. So I can see why he was hyped up about it.
I think I mentioned this maybe on the last podcast. But Thin Lizzy, it was the one I did with John and Brett about the top songs ever. And I had Thin Lizzy's two songs, Thunder and Lightning and Cold Sweat. Two of my favorite songs ever are those two. And John Sykes is on that album. Yeah.
I got to check it out. And guys, don't be down on me. I do have that podcast bookmarked. So I just need to carve aside how long. It was pretty long there, wasn't it?
Yeah, we went long on that one.
Yeah. Because I saw the time length, I was like, maybe I can catch it before breakfast. And I was like, I don't think I can do that. But
it was only an hour and a half.
Hour and 23 or something.
It wasn't.
I can handle it.
It wasn't.
It's been a little longer than normal, but that's okay. We had a lot to talk about.
I think John's have an Irish coffee.
Now, me and Blake talked about the coffee this morning. I can't have any because I'll be up in the bathroom every 10 minutes.
Crap.
Exactly.
I didn't hear that. I'll get some after the show.
It's all right.
Okay, before we get to the top albums of the year, do we know? Okay, we already talked briefly, Sabotage maybe having a new album.
Anthrax.
Megadeth. I don't know. Do you guys know anything else about any albums?
Blake, you missed a big one. You missed, for all the thrash metal guys out there, you missed Dark Angel doing their first tour in 30 years.
That's right.
And they put out an album called Extinction Level Event, which is an excellent album. I got to catch the show in Greensboro, and I almost didn't because the show was initially scheduled to be performed in Charlotte. And I had to work that night, and I wasn't going to drive an hour and a half down there, miss work and all that. And for some sort of scheduling snafu, I think it had something to do with the Judas Priest show being the same night, the show got canceled. And I don't know if it was the band's manager or the promoters here in Greensboro, but they picked it up, and they announced it on a Thursday for a Sunday night show. Like an impromptu Sunday night gig because of the Charlotte show being canceled. I had just been scrolling on Facebook at that time before I deleted my account, obviously. And I was like, oh, shit. Dark Angel, Sacred Reich, and Hyrax.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I haven't heard Sacred Reich. I haven't heard that band name in years. Wow, man.
And let me tell you, Phil Vane's vocals still sound phenomenal to this day. He sounded great. So, yeah, I got the ticket last minute. I'm like, hell, I got to go see this now. It's right in my backyard. So I went up to Greensboro. Got to tell you guys, Hyrax was one of the best live acts I think I've ever seen. The energy level was unreal from those guys. I can't say enough good things about them. Sacred Reich.
I don't know too much about them, Hyrax.
I've only ever known the name. I never really followed them. I knew they were pretty big underground thrash metal. But man, their live show was great. Just
awesome.
It was a disappointing turnout because it was a last minute thing. So the venue was maybe only half full, but they didn't care. They rocked out like they were at Wacken. They rocked out.
Love that.
Yeah, at Sacred Reich, kicked off the show with a title track from The American Way, and they ended it with Surf Nicaragua, and they played.
I was going to throw out the surf.
And like I said, man. Phil still sounds great. I got to meet Wiley after the show. Very nice guy. Quiet, but very nice guy. Was generous with his time. And then the headliners being Dark Angel for the first time in 30 freaking years, man. And they put on a hell of a show. I got to say that Ron Reinhart has, he's one of my favorite thrash metal singers, man. He's just got a great thrash voice. He's a hell of a performer, high energy. Like he was literally out in the crowd singing and shit. Just amazing. Kind of bittersweet because of Jim Durkin, of course, passed away. I think it was the year before last. And the woman who replaced him was phenomenal, was handpicked actually by Jim during his health issues. And she played great, man. Laura Christine, she's a tiny little woman, and she's up there rocking out with the big dogs, high energy. So yeah, they were phenomenal. I got to meet Eric Meyer, and I got to meet Laura, and I got to meet Ron after the show. I was hanging out. Again, some of the sweetest people I think I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. Laura gave me a set list. Eric gave me a pick. Just spent probably a good half hour bullshitting, got pictures with all of them. Very great, very generous, very sweet people. Can't say enough good things about them. Yeah, man, that was a hell of a show for all the old school thrash metal heads. Dark Angel's back, which is big news, and they were great. They put on a hell of a performance. So that was my big reunion.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, and Eric, do you know, is there any other albums? I know I took a quick look, but I didn't see any other too big a names there.
Yeah, they don't have, so I looked it up one more time. I spent time on Testaments for a while. Obviously, their new album's out, but like I looked at Testaments and Anthrax's new albums, and Anthrax, what they're showing right now is their new album since 2016's For All Kings, it's hard to believe it's been that long, is tentatively set for an early 2026 release with a single expected by late 2025. Here we are, it's the year's about to end and I'm looking for a new single and there's nothing there. So I'm hoping it's really soon. Yeah, that's about it for right now with Anthrax.
And
I'm trying to think of anybody else releases. So,
yeah, I don't know if Iron Maiden's gonna, but they're still on a tour. Metallica is probably still touring. Let's see. And of course the groups that are on our list aren't gonna have new albums, I don't imagine.
That'd be pretty tough to pull off.
Well, I mentioned.
Oh, Rob Zombie. Sorry about that. Rob Zombie. I remember hearing that. So I'm curious. I heard his last one was really good. I didn't check it out, but
I like,
he's not my favorite artist, but I do like some of his music. It's a little more commercial, but Evanescence is going to have a new album out. I'm seeing them over the summer. A buddy of mine picked up tickets. So that should be a pretty cool show. She's got a great voice, Amy Lee. I didn't even hear their last album or two. But that should be interesting. Here's like a big old list here. Rob Zombie, they're showing February 27th. Seven Dust, man, they've been busy. They're showing early 2026. Rumored, they're showing, yep, Sabotage. Wow, they have a name, Curtain Call. Did you know that, Blake? I did not realize they had a title.
Yeah, wow. I have that list.
Okay.
There, yes.
Okay. Tool, rumored for 2026. I saw on YouTube, they're back in the studio, so I'm looking forward to that. Slipknots, Tura, Carnival, I don't know who, Pagan Altar, Rotting Christ, Rocky and the Sweden, Psy, and wow, Paul Di'Anno, live album. Ooh, I'll have to check that one out.
Somebody's still making money, you know.
Man, that's something, yeah.
And what about tours that you see this, like in 2025, is there any really special tours you see, even though, John, you just mentioned Dark Angel thing?
Dream Theater was something else. Thanks, man. Yeah, DT was really good. I caught them, when was it? Like April, I want to say. April of this year in DC. And man, they sounded phenomenal. Their original drummer and one of their founding members, Mike Portnoy, was back. I don't want to say too much because their live album actually made my top 10. But it's actually from this tour. Hearing the songs, I could picture seeing them. We had phenomenal seats. My buddy Brian got us some amazing seats, and it was a great time. They delivered. They did a pretty nice job. I wanted to hear more of the new album, More of Parasomnia, and I'll talk about that one a little bit later, too. They played one single off of that album, but they played some of the classic DT songs, and they sounded great. And again, it was reinvigorating seeing Mike Portnoy up on stage back with the boys. That was really cool. And then I saw, this is definitely not a metal band, but I've heard really good things about them. Pink Floyd certainly has influenced some metal bands over the years. No, I didn't get to go see Pink Floyd. There's none of that. But I saw a Brit Floyd, and they are from the UK. They're widely considered the premier Pink Floyd cover band, and I've heard things about them for well over a decade, and I finally got to see them. This was also downtown at the Lincoln Theater. Actually, this was Warner Theater. DT was at the Lincoln Theater. But they were phenomenal. They played, since it was the 50-year anniversary of Wish You Were Here, they played that album from beginning to end for their second set. But they sounded great. And one of the female singers was from Pink Floyd, like from their mid-90s. So that was interesting. But all the music, the vocals, they go all out. They have the laser lights too. Man, you want to talk about an experience? There were some people next to us. They were like definitely older than me, but they smelled of some ganja. They definitely had some weed. Even one of the guys is like, hey, let's go ahead. It's intermission. Let's go ahead and step outside. We're gonna go smoke a bowl and we'll come back in for the second set. I couldn't believe these guys. They're in their 60s and they're all gung-ho to get all crazy. But I guess if you want to get the experience, you got to do that or do something else. But I enjoyed it and I was sober. I had a good time. The beers were, I think, like $12. I was like, I'm not even going to have a beer tonight. Forget that. It's getting too expensive.
This was in D.C., you said?
It was.
Okay. It's not the Donald Trump Lincoln Center?
Oh, my God. He's trying to attach his name to everything, but I guess that's a completely different conversation there. But yeah, Brett Floyd was really enjoyable, man. I had a blast. And the thing is, I even showed like some of the kids at school. I work in an elementary school. And I was like, you know what? These kids, most of them obviously haven't been to concerts, let alone like a rock concert. So they were like, oh, wow. And they're watching it. And of course, they're looking at the laser lights more than listening to the music. But they're like, oh, that's awesome. And I was like, it's cool to just see like a younger person's perspective on the concert. But it was a really fun time.
And John, do you have any other concerts you want to talk about that you saw this year?
Oh, man, I think I went to about 7 this year. And they were all, other than the Dark Angel show, there was all death metal stuff. I kicked off the year with Nile and 6 Feet Under, which was, again, Chris Barnes from 6 Feet Under. He's another guy who's been in the media for all the wrong reasons as far as inflammatory remarks towards other bands and this, that, and every death metal vocalist sucks except me, yada, yada. But I'll tell you what, I got to hand it to the guy. He was sick as a dog, could barely walk, came out on stage, and he performed the entire set. He didn't mail it in. He didn't cancel. He didn't have somebody else do the vocals for him. He performed the entire set, you know, just looking deathly ill. And I know it was legit because whatever he had, I caught 2 days later. There was just some shit going around, man. So, yeah, I gained a huge measure of respect for Chris Barnes after that show, definitely. And then there was Cavalera performed the Sepultura album Schizophrenia in its entirety, supported by Necrot, one of my favorite live bands. Their energy level's unreal, man. They're a great live band. I think they played better than Cavalera, actually. And, had Frozen Soul came through, 200 Stab Wounds, Black Braid. Funny thing about that show, as great as the show was, and as much as I enjoy Black Braid, I think John's a hell of a songwriter. His mic went out about 2/3 of the way into the show during Twilight Hymns of Ancient Blood, and he went berserk. Now, I understand in a live setting, every band has their Spinal Tap moments. I get it. Shit happens. But you can tell they're a young band on their first headlining tour, and hopefully they learn from it, whatever. But he went nuts. He kicked a water bottle back at the drummer. He picked up another one, full water bottle, threw it at the techs. Just went.
Oh, wow. That's a bad look. Ooh.
Yeah, before the song was over, they had everything up and running again, and they finished out. Like I said, they played great. It was a high-energy, high-intensity show. But it is very unfortunate because of his temper and his manner that's the only thing I think anybody talked about the next day was John losing his shit on stage. And I can understand your first headlining tour, you want everything to be perfect, but shit happens. You roll with it. I think anybody else would have. So yeah, I lost a measure of respect for the guy after that, just for acting like a child, basically.
He had some controversy like a year ago, too. I don't remember what it was, but they
had an issue where the guitar player, they were playing a festival, I think in Sweden, and the guitar player got drunk and was essentially escorted out of the venue after the show or whatever. They made a statement that it was a racist thing and blah, 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 which generated a lot of heat, which they later recanted. But again, like I said, they're young guys. Hopefully they get their shit together and carry on. Like I said, the music's phenomenal. John's a hell of a songwriter, but yeah, that was the one takeaway from that show. And that was the first time I'd ever seen anybody do that, man. Like I said, everybody has their quote unquote Spinal Tap moment and they just roll with it and things go back.
Things happen.
Yeah.
And since you brought that up, I just watched Spinal Tap 2 the other day.
I was curious about Rob Reiner,
first of all, who, of course, we know what happened there. That was too bad, but he made two good movies about a fictional heavy metal group, Spinal Tap. But I did, I watched Spinal Tap 2, and it was funny. Maybe not as funny as the first one, of course, but it was still a lot of moments where I was laughing my ass off, even though I wasn't really expecting it to be very good, actually. But I was. It was still pretty good. And there's some stupid stuff in it, obviously. But Christopher Guest as Nigel, the guitarist, he's
wacky. He's a character.
But
oh, yeah.
I don't want to give anything away. But yes, if you haven't watched it, watch it. It's funny.
You got to go check it out.
It's still hilarious. So there's still some Fran Drescher's in it again from the first one for a few minutes. And there's some guests in it from the Beatles. Paul McCartney's in it. Elton John.
Oh, wow.
Why, but John's in it, does a song with Spinal. but anyway, it's good, so watch it. So yeah. Oh, and I do next year. I know we've already mentioned some things. I'm hoping to see Halloween, but I'm not sure I will. But Halloween,
yeah, I want to catch it too.
I've never seen Halloween live, even though they're one of my favorite bands. I would like to see them. I don't know if I'll get to it or not.
And you got all their albums, right? Yeah, you got all their albums. Yeah. But that's impressive.
Because they don't come to North America very often, even though
they don't
here, like two years ago. And now they're coming back again. So we'll see if I get the chance. I'm not sure. And Canadian band Triumph, Eric knows who Triumph is at least. Triumph is going back on tour also for I don't know if it's a reunion. I don't know what you want to. I don't know if they're making a new album or not. Probably not. But you never know. But I know they're going on tour. They announced it. Rush is going on tour, or maybe they're already on tour with a female drummer there taking place. But Triumph is another band, since I'm a Canadian, that I really like. And I've never seen them live either, so I wouldn't mind going.
Oh, wow.
But we'll see if that works out. Okay. Anything else you want to add before we get to our lists?
Yeah, real quick, for all the Florida death metal heads out there, I did get to see Inhuman Condition in November. And I got to tell you guys, it's my third time seeing them previously open for Deicide and open for Vader, and blew both bands away, just completely destroyed them live. Like, I would not want to have to headline with these guys on the bill, because they are the best live band I think I've ever seen, ever. High energy, man, high energy. The vocalist, Jeremy Kling, also plays drums in Overkill. And he comes running up. You look at the guy and you think, man, there's no way in hell this dude's in a band. He's like this little trailer park redneck with a mullet and a mustache and his hat on backwards. And he comes running out on stage. And man, there is smoke coming out of his ears and his hair's on fire. And he's waving his arms around like he's freaking Rodan. I mean, and the crowd eats it up, man. He's unreal. He is an absolute beast of a front man. So for any of the death metal heads out there, you want to catch a great live band, check out Inhuman Condition. The guitarist, Taylor Nordberg's in Deicide. The bass player is none other than Terry Butler from Death, Massacre, Obituary, 6 Feet Under. So some legendary shit there. Definitely recommended.
Okay, Eric, you have anything to add before we get to this?
I'm ready to dive into our lists.
Okay, now I'm going to do the... Since some of the ones on the Metal Pits top 10 list appear on both of your lists, I'm going to do the Metal Pits list first. And so you can comment on the groups if you want when we go through it. And then you can do your own list and have ones that don't appear in the top 10. So even though I did see your top 10s, I forget them now, but I know.
You've got the evidence.
Now there is a top 30 list that I have started to post on the Metal Pits Instagram, which is at the Metal Pit. So if you follow us on Instagram, you can check there, because Inhuman Condition is in the top 30 there. Like John was just talking about them. And we got some groups that I can't pronounce their names, so I'm glad they're not in the top 10. We got Benedictions in there, and Hailstorms in there, and Catatonia, who Eric is a big fan of, I think, is in there. So keep following Instagram, and then later I'll post them on the website, but it's counting it down on Instagram. At the time we're recording this, I'm only at number 28, so there's still 27 to go. But if you want to hear the top 10, you're going to hear it right now. So here's the top 10. Number 10, I got Burning Witches with their album Inquisition. And I know John is a big fan of Burning Witches, and they, of course, it was their sixth full-length album from the all-female Swiss metal band. It was released in August, and of course, that features the dual guitar tech of Romana Calcul and Courtney Cox, not of Friends, but the guitarist for Friends. And I don't know if Eric, have you ever listened to Burning Witches, Eric? I'm not sure.
I have not, but I'm interested. I didn't realize it was an all-female group, so... They're like, what kind of metal are they? Or
power metal, traditional metal. John,
okay,
what you'd call it.
Classic metal,
kind of a classic Euro metal, very much in the vein of Warlock or even Dio or Judas Priest.
Okay, I'll have to check them out. Yeah,
they're a favorite guilty pleasure of mine when I'm in the mood for some Euro classic metal. Those are the ladies I turn to.
Okay,
the last couple of albums were all really excellent, so definitely recommend.
And they're not bad looking either.
Oh, they're easy on the eyes. Laura's a goddess. Laura is gorgeous. Oh my God.
It never hurts.
Yes. So yeah, that was their sixth album. So that's our number 10. Number 9, we got a classic band here, which I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's on Eric's list. I forget. But anyway, we got Testament. We mentioned them before, but with their album Parabellum. And of course, thrash metal. That was their 14th studio album, released in October. And they have a new drummer, Chris Dovis, who was the new drummer. I didn't really even pay attention to that, but I did like that album too. And I know Eric likes it. John, I don't know if you're a Testament fan.
It's odd, man. Because like I remember being in high school back in the 1990s, and it seemed like everybody who was a metalhead was wearing their shirts. And they're the one band that, for whatever reason, I never really did a deep dive into. I've always enjoyed the songs that I've heard. Disciples of the Watch, which is just awesome. And I've heard a little bit of this new album, and it is heavy.
Really heavy.
So, yeah, eventually I'm just going to have to sit down and just have an all-day dive into Testament. I know that they're phenomenal musicians, and they've got a hell of a lot of material. Yeah, I guess I'm just a terrible metalhead, man. For whatever reason, I just never, ever got around to it.
Well, check out the New Order.
See, Testament started thrash, then they went a little bit death, which you might like his vocals.
The Gathering. Death. You were like, yeah.
But now they went back again to classic, more thrash and not as much death vocals. More, I guess, death.
This one, this one has...
What I heard was very deathy.
Yeah, Blake. So, Blake, have you seen... So, I caught this, like, there's one guy on YouTube, and he mentioned... It was interesting, because maybe, John, you've heard this terminology, because I know death metal, that's your wheelhouse. But they consider this album blackened death metal meets thrash. Okay. So I wasn't familiar with that term, blackened death metal, but some of the vocals are like crazy aggressive, and they do blast beats, and then they do some tremolo picking stuff. So some of it I don't love, but some of it I do really like. But they mix extreme, to me, they mix like extreme metal with thrash metal. So yeah. There's a good chance you would like their new album.
Oh, yeah, and I like the little bit of it that I've heard. I've really enjoyed. I've never not liked anything that I've heard from Testament. It's just a matter of there's so many bands out there, and particularly when Testament was at their heyday, at their peak, I was really into Overkill and Nuclear Assault and Sadus. I never quite got around to them. Prong was another big one, still is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to have to sit down and really just dive into them. I just never quite got around to it.
Yeah, they have a lot of great albums. They're one of my favorite. And were they were one of the top four, weren't they? Big four? No, they weren't.
No,
them and Overkill, I'll argue with anybody. Those two bands they're like two of the most consistent bands. Maybe even Overkill a little bit more. But yeah, they definitely should have been there. I met Testament when I was 19. I couldn't believe it. They're like, here, they gave me a beer and let me on the tour bus. And I was like, what the hell? It was up in Baltimore, Network Nightclub. The place is rubble. It's been rubble for years, but it was so loud. And I was actually swimming. They launched me up on the crowd. And, you know, I was probably $1.20, $1.25 then. And it was great. But the guys are nice. And Alex Skolnick's probably, this guy is a total like dweeb, because I'm like, hey, man, what kind of pickups are you using in that Ibanez? And I'm we're talking, but he sat down and we talked for a few minutes about guitar, and it was awesome. It was great that the band like took the time to let some people, just a few of us, get on the bus. And yeah, that just kind of left a mark with me. I was like, hey, these guys are down to earth. They're great musicians, put on a super high energy performance, and then they take time for their fans. And yeah, I was like, okay, just chatting with them was like the coolest part. And then like the guitar pick from Skolnick and the beer on top, I was like, ooh, icing on the cake.
Okay. Number eight, I got the group called Witch Hazel. I'm not sure if anybody even knows them. Mm. Have you two guys?
Nope. I don't really know them either.
But they're hard rock, heavy metal, so maybe on the
other
side. And it's the fifth album. They're from the UK. And the sound of the album takes you back to 1979. Mm. So whatever. That's
interesting.
That's their sound.
I was three.
Interesting. 79.
I'm not sure how long they've been. They've only had five albums. I'm not sure how long they've been around, but I guess they have the old
Witch Hazel. Anyway. Okay.
But they got twin guitar harmonies and they have Christian influenced lyrics, which is a little different, but they've often been compared to Thin Lizzy, I guess. So if you like Thin Lizzy, maybe check out Witch Hazel if you haven't heard them before. Our number seven, we got Coroner, who I think is on John's list. Dissonance Theory, and this is a technical thrash, I guess we might call that. I don't know. This was a historic release. It was the sixth album and their fifth, their fifth studio album in over 30 years. What does that mean? Sorry.
It was their first studio album in 30 years.
Oh, is that what it
is? Oh, wow.
That's what I meant to say. Sorry. That is what it says. Since 1993 album, Grin. And they has a new drummer. I'm not going to try to say his name, but they haven't lost their edge. Would you agree on that, John? Because I know you're a fan.
Oh, yeah. It's not quite as aggressive as earlier releases like Punishment for Decadence or No More Color, but there's a little bit of everything on there, man. It's aggressive at times, but it's melodic at times, and it's just catchy and heavy at times, but it's atmospheric at times. There's just a little bit of everything, and it's all done exceptionally well. I was lucky enough to review this album, which was a big deal for me because I was a big fan of Coroner back in the early 90s. I think from a musicianship standpoint, they blew away anything that was going on here in the States at the time. They're just unreal. I've heard people refer to them as the Rush of thrash metal because they're a three-piece and they do all that virtuoso stuff. So yeah, I was very excited about this. I actually bought the two-disc little box set that they came out with for this release. And yeah, man, I love it. It's a banger, man. I recommend it for everybody, definitely.
Should check that out. Yes. Okay. Number six.
Sounds cool.
Number six, I got a Canadian band in here with the group Sacrifice and their album Volume of Skulls. And now this was their first album in 16 years since their 2009 album, The Ones I Condemn. And this is Canadian thrash. I would say they're in the big five of the Canadian thrash here. We were just talking about the big four.
Canada has five bands?
Uh-oh.
We had five.
Shots fired.
Well, this is back in the 80s, all the band Voivod, Razor, Exciter, Annihilator. But I wouldn't really call Voivod thrash, but a lot of people do. But anyway, so I said they're five. So Sacrifice is a great band, and this is a great album, and it's called Volume of Skulls. Yes. Is that right? Yeah. No, I don't think that's right. I think that title's wrong. I think it's called Volume 6. I don't know why it says Volume of Skulls there at all.
Maybe there's a song. Maybe there's a song called Volume of Skulls.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. It's some mistake there, but I think it is called Volume 6, if I'm not mistaken, because it is the sixth album. But anyway, we'll check that out. But anyway, Sacrifice is on there. Okay, number five, we got, I think this is an American band, yes, Castrator. I know John really likes Castrator. This is the second album, I guess you would say, full length from this death metal band. Are they all females, right?
Or they are all female.
All females.
Yes, they are. And if you're going to be in an all-female death metal band, you have to be named Castrator. You just have to. But I saw them live 2 years ago, opening up for Immolation and Cattle Decap, and they put on a hell of a good show, one of the better opening acts I'd ever seen. They sounded great. The performance was tight. So yeah, I was really impressed with them, enough so that when I found out they were coming out with this album, which unfortunately was, I found out after the release date and so didn't review it. But yeah, it's about as perfect of a death metal album as you could ask for. It's really good. I like it a lot.
I don't think I named the title. Coronation of the Grotesque was the name.
Yes.
And I actually saw that same concert in Canada, obviously, but I saw them live too, actually. I was at that show too, even though I'm not a death metal guy, but I was there anyway with other people.
Nice.
And they were there. So I took some pictures of them, actually. Okay.
We'll turn you yet.
Okay. Number four, we're going old school again here with Helloween and their album Giants and Monsters. Obviously, woo-hoo! Helloween is power metal. This is their 17th studio album. Wow. And I know Eric really likes Helloween too. Eric, you want to say anything about this album? I think it's probably on your list too, but
it is on my list. Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I was like, I wonder how Helloween's going to sound. And I knew they were keeping, like, the 7 band members, which I'm like, oh my gosh. Thinking about bands, and I've played in bands, and everybody has an ego. Everybody wants to be heard. Everybody wants their spotlights. I'm like, how do they manage that? But I got to say, like, vocally, it's one of the highlights is that they have some different vocals. And even a couple of the tracks have two vocalists. So I'm like, they really pulled it off well. And musically, it sounds great. The production's there. The variety's there. It's, I don't want to say too much about it, but gosh, man, it's so stinking catchy. I was like, wow, it's just like, how can metal be this catchy? And I'm like, they pull it off, though. It's Helloween.
Yeah, I think they have, yeah.
Yeah, they have that high energy. Some of the stuff, some of the riffs are pretty raw and pretty intense, but then they have some of the twin harmonies. They'll have maybe like a synth part here or there, but I'm like, vocally, like the choruses are just, man, it's just ear candy. Really is. Do you like the album much, Blake?
I only listened to it a little bit, but I did like it, but I didn't really give it a good listen. I should sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, but, yeah.
Yeah, they got three singers, of course, of the 7 band members. Three of them are singers. I don't know how they do that live, if one person's singing a song or if they're going back and forth all the time. I don't know what they're doing there, or if the other two are taking a rest or whatever. So I don't know, but I don't know. One, Kai Hansen, of course, also plays the guitar. I assume.
Yep, they have three guitarists. Yeah, they have three guitarists too, which is crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, yeah, so Helloween. Okay, number three. Now I got Stillbirth. I'm sure Eric's a big fan of Stillbirth. Okay.
Whatever you say, Blake.
And I don't know, John, do you know who Stillbirth is?
I haven't heard it. Okay. I haven't heard.
Okay, this is, the album is called Survival Protocol, and they are brutal death metal and surf death. I don't know what that means. But anyway, it's the Germans' 9th studio album. They're known for their unique mix of crushing slam riffs and surf aesthetics. Again, I still don't know what that means. Sorry, I got it written down because I got it up somewhere else.
Okay.
But I know one of our writers, it was Shelley from Australia, really liked this band and stuff, and that's how it made it to our number three. So check out her review. It's on the website somewhere. Check out reviews and then maybe check out the band. But maybe tell me what surf death means, because I have no idea what that
is. Never heard of it.
Okay, number two, we got Dream Theater and their album Parasomnia, which must have came out. Oh yeah, it came out in February, early in the year. And of course, me and Eric did a podcast on it before the album.
That was fun. Yeah.
And we've already talked about Dream Theater a little bit. And I know Eric will talk. We'll talk about it more later. Because I know
sounds good.
They'll be on Eric's list too, so we can talk a little more about them. And our number one album, who we have also talked about before on the podcast already, by John, of course. And that is Black Braid, made the number one album of the year.
Wow.
Metal Pit with their Black Braid 3 is what it's called. The title, because they're not too original with their album titles. 1, 2, and 3, but I guess that's Led Zeppelin. And of course, it is, I can't say this word, it's from the solo Native American black metal project led by, you said his name was what, John?
Yeah, that's his American name.
Yeah,
he goes by Sagagasawa.
That's it.
I think is how you pronounce it. Yeah. But it's an excellent album. Songwriting is, again, phenomenal. I didn't like it quite as much as the first two, but it's still just, yeah, it's in my top three for album of the year. It's great. There's just some really cool instrumental passages in there where they incorporate things like flute and some soundscapes, like streams running by and loons cackling and stuff. It's a really good album. Yeah, nothing to pick about there.
It's excellent. I've listened to a little bit of Black Parade. I'm not a black metal fan much at all, but I don't mind what I've heard. Like there, and I think Eric might enjoy it too a little bit. You could check it out sometime, but they're not. Okay. It's not. I don't know how to explain it. But anyway, it's got its progressive moments, I guess you would say. Atmosphere.
Yeah,
you got my attention.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's definitely got. It's not your traditional low budget. Recorded in a cardboard box, black metal. It's got some atmospherics to it. The production value is really good. Now, they still play above the fifth fret, so it does have that where's the bass sound to it, which is typical black metal. But yeah, the guitar works phenomenal. John actually records all the instruments himself. He has a touring band, but as far as the actual recording of the albums, it's just him.
That's impressive.
Okay, now I'm going to go. We're going to keep the death metal fans to the end. So we're going to do Eric's top 10 first. So you death metal fans, John's a death metal guy. So I'm sure we've already mentioned a few, but I'm sure there's a few more on his list. Eric, let's do your top 10 list.
Let's do it. Yeah, I'm going to throw this one out for all the prog fans. And I don't even know if we have many alternative like metal fans on the metal pit. And actually, a genre that swept me away this year. It was probably about halfway through the year, but like post-rock, post-metal, and most of that stuff's like primarily instrumental. But yeah, so you'll have to check out my list, see what you think. Number 10, we've already talked about him, Dream Theater. I call it Live in Paris because I am not close to fluent in French, so I won't try to say that Q word. The recording, I will speak from not being in Paris, but listening to the album many times before I was able to review it. Thank you again for the early release, Blake. I thoroughly enjoyed listening to it before it was released. I'm enjoying it as it's out now. The production is, I have to say, is the best out of any of their live albums. Song-wise, I think it's strong. Chaos and Motion is the gold standard as far as I'm concerned for Dream Theater songs. That set list is just the best. But I think it's a nice mix of older DT, mid, I don't know if you want to call it like, not mid-century, but the middle of DT, 40 years going, man. That's impressive. No matter what genre of music you're playing in. And they even play like one of their new tracks, they actually play on there as well. But I really like Live in Paris. I would say, obviously, they're the kings of progressive metal. It's funny everybody, go check out my write-up on the Metal Pit. But it's funny because there was an omission on my part. I left off Octavarium, and that is certainly one of the highlights on the album. I know Blake's a fan of the song. It does take a little while to get going, but they definitely tip their cap to a lot of their 70s prog rock bands that they grew up on. ELP, yes, King Crimson, some Rush, but it's a great song, man. And I got to say, it's one of LaBrie's finest in, I would say, within the last 20 or so years. That song itself is amazing, and they pull it off very well on this live album, but the whole live album's great. I could bore you guys probably with all the songs. I had to stop myself. Uh-huh.
The album is almost 3 hours long.
Oh, it's something where
like,
you have to...
That's what their concerts are like, too. They don't...
They are. Oh, yeah. Band. Correct. They had a full-blown intermission, which made sense when I saw them in April in D.C., and I think you have to, because you open with the Metropolis, which is nearly 10 minutes long, and they don't mess around. If you're looking for the three-minute hit songs, don't look D.T.'s way. You're gonna have to go to the Taylor Swift or somebody else, man. It's not going to work, but it's a really nice album. Yeah, more on D.T. later. So, number 9, this is a band that's really... It's funny, I don't know how either of you view YouTube for music, but YouTube is definitely it's a niche for me now. It wasn't, say, 2 or 3 years ago. I'm sure we're all guilty of going, okay, such and such is my favorite band from whatever, 10, 20 years ago. And you might look for like their new single or new album on YouTube. I don't know if you guys do that, but I just came across this band. I was like, okay, We Lost the Sea. What is that about? I was like, sounds kind of like a downer, but I was like, let me listen to the music. And there's an album that's called A Single Flower. And I was like, wow, that's something about this bird. It's like falling. And then there's this, looks like a rose there. And I was like, let me check it out. But it's got this somber yet angsty kind of tonality to it. And apparently it's one of their, I guess, quote unquote, heavier albums. It's, I would call it rock with a splash of metal, but it's definitely going for, you know, like an atmosphere, going for a mood. They used to have a singer in, I'm trying to think of what year it was, but he took his own life, sadly. But yeah, they're instrumentally, they have a really neat sound. They're in the post-rock kind of genre. But I listened to the whole album yesterday, A Single Flower is their latest album. There's another one, Departure Songs, but I really like what I've heard from them. So that's my number 9. I actually close. And Blake, I didn't want you to try to have to track the song. I will say, since it's, I'm trying to find it on here, since it's 27 minutes long, I didn't expect you to listen to it, but I was like, wow. I still haven't listened to it. Yeah, that's okay. I wouldn't expect you to, but I was like, I was looking it over and I was like, man, I was like, okay, who has like the gojones to do like a song this long to even attempt it? And like, how boring is it going to be? Departure Songs is the name of the 2015 release. It's actually very good too. But A Single Flower is really cool. And it's Blood Will Have Blood is the name of the song. But it's 27 minutes and 10 seconds. And it starts off with some energy and then it like drops out. And you're like, what are they doing now? And it gets more atmospheric. And you're like, okay, what's going on? And then they pick it back up. And not to bore you guys, but then like at the end, it picks back up. And I was like, okay, this is the third or fourth wind. But it's a damn good song. One song both of you should check out just because I would say more of the darkness of it, A Dance with Death. And I can't help but think Iron Maiden when I hear like Dance and Death together. But it's not quite like that. Like definitely Steve Harris definitely wrote a gem of a song with that particular tune. But their song, it's got a really cool edge to it. And it has this mysterious kind of some of these dark kind of undertones. Great song. I would probably say that's my favorite song off the album. It's 6 songs, yet the album's 1 hour and 10 minutes. So I've learned in a few months that I've been like, I've listened to 2 bands that are considered post-rock, Tesseract and Caspian. And they're both different bands, but I've been into them for 8-9 years. But more of the post-rock stuff has jumped out to me over the last maybe 6 months. But it's a really good album. So that's my long-winded way to say, hey, that's number 9, We Lost the Sea, A Single Flower. It definitely invokes your thoughts. And this next band, Carved Into the Sun, I was listening to this as I was shaving this morning. And Silent Tower is the album. It's really cool. It's not quite as diverse as more of the post-rock music out there. It's more clean guitar. And I probably should do a little bit more homework on their stuff. I don't know if he's truly playing a 7-string. I think he's tuned down a couple steps. But when he cranks on the gain, you can really hear it. But it's more kind of soundscapes with a lot of clean layered guitars, some sparse melodies. It is definitely on the darker side. So I think that's where metal fans might be like, okay, it's not heavy all the time. But you can feel them building towards something. And just the deep guitar, the deep bass guitar, and hey, wait a minute, we have bass guitar on this album. But in a lot of music that I listen to, sometimes the bass is kind of lost, some of the heavier stuff. So here you can actually hear the bass guitar playing, and it does really add quite a bit. Because there's some percussion, there's some drumming, but it's not like what a lot of we listen to where there's steady drums throughout. They pick their spots, but it's very well done. And again, this one it's 6 tracks, but it's interesting. They're long songs. What Deepest Remains is a phenomenal song. It's the album closer, but it starts off heavy. It builds up again, and bam, it just really hits you once the high gain's on. But one thing that's cool that some of these post-rock, these guys are more post-metal, but they really, and they do incorporate a lot of other influences, but I like how they still retain some of these neat like delays and reverbs with the clean guitar parts. So you have this like ambient sound in the background, but then you have this really heavy guitars just sustaining like over top or underneath, just depending on whether you're listening through a speaker or headphones and earbuds. But that's, I think it's a really cool mix where they're not going for the extreme, saying Opeth or somebody like that, where it's clean or acoustic, and then boom, they just hit you with these super heavy guitars and harsh vocals. Here, these guys will have the delayed or reverb guitars just sprinkling about with these long 10 to 15 second delays with boom, these just punishing like drop C, super heavy guitar chords sustaining. And I can picture some people would be like, I liked it before, but now I'm not so sure. Whereas I'm like, okay, I'm embracing the heavy guitars and I still like the kind of moody, froggy elements there as well. But Carved Into the Sun, Silent Tower is a good one. I could go back and forth. I like A Single Flower a lot as well. Number seven, this is definitely a departure. Used that word earlier with an album, but this is a departure, honestly, for my tastes. And I don't know if you guys get into them. I've gone back and forth with this band, Nine Inch Nails, Tron Ares. So it's a soundtrack. It's not Pretty Hate Machine. It's not The Downward Spiral. You could mention maybe Fragile. It's not one of their, even that's not a newer Nine Inch Nails album. But it's cool because you have the elements of a soundtrack where it's slow building. There's some synths. But then you have some other kind of almost like dance. Like I'm picturing, I don't know if you guys are big John Wick fans, but I'm picturing, okay, Keanu Reeves is starting to, he's doing his gung fu. All right, who's getting taken out? How many people is he up against? You see somebody on the dance floor. Are they in Spain? Are they in France? I'm picturing that with the Tron Ares. And I get it. It's for the Tron Ares movie, which I haven't seen. But I can't judge the movie. I haven't seen it. But the soundtrack is great. And yeah, it's hard to pick a favorite, but I do like it a lot. And it's a longer, I'm trying to catch the track length on it right now. But it's obviously soundtracks in general. You're not going to get like a short-winded album. Thanks, Blank. Yeah. But As Alive As You Need Me to Be is like the single, and Trent Reznor sings on that. And it's got that doom, doom, doo, doo, doo. It's got the synth, it's got the beats going. So it's, again, I'm picturing Wick taking out some poor sucker that's probably twice his size, but boom, he's got him by Glock point blank, but they got this dance, got this beat going, but it's got this edge to it. And I think that's one thing that Reznor does well is he incorporates the electronic elements. You'll get your guitar here and there, not every track, but it does that, has that edge, have that edge to it. And Trent's vocals, he doesn't try to pretend that he's somebody else. And I'll always respect any musician that, like, they know what they do. They know what they do best. Yes, they'll branch out and try some different things, but they hone in on what they do, what their strengths are. And like that song, As Alive As You Need Me to Be, that's like a synopsis, that single off the album. It's so damn good. It's so catchy, but it has that like edge to it too. That Trent does so well with Nin. But that's my number seven. I've listened to it quite a bit. I really like that album, beginning to end. Again, not every song has vocals. I'm a longtime guitarist. I like some instrumental music. I'm cool with it. I would be curious how like your standard Nin fan, like they might like only the songs where Trent sings, but really solid album. That's number seven. Number six, this is another one, which I guess it wouldn't be like a standard Metal Pit listener album, but Chevelle's one of those bands that I've liked over the years. More alt, hard rock, heavy metal. They tune down to B flat, so picture a seven string half step down. It's nothing technical. I love some technical music, lead guitar playing, but the riffs are great. They're chunky. It's a really strong release by Chevelle.
They've always had a good groove.
It's funny. Like that was like the next word besides chunky. I didn't write it down, but groove, you hit it, John. Like, it's kind of nice. Like, it's got these chunky riffs. They got a groove. You know what you're going to get with Chevelle. The vocals are good. They're solid. Sometimes he tries to sound a little bit like Maynard from Tool. Not a bad thing, but he'll do his own scream once in a while, which he does on here. And it fits the songs well, but there's no shortage of riffing. Karma Goddess is a bit more dynamic. It's slower. It's a little more ambient. It was a little bit unexpected. I wouldn't call it a ballad, but it's a little slower. But it gets rocking, but the only thing to me, I was disappointed because it's like a 39-minute album. I was like, oh, man. I was like, all right, we need two or three more songs on here. But I like every song off the album. It's every single they release off the album. It's excellent, man. Yeah, I really like that album. I've definitely listened to that one. I listened to it some when it came out. I think my problem is I'll end up listening to, I guess as a teen and maybe even early 20s, I would find one or two albums and then just listen to it constantly over and over again. Like I felt, you'd feel like, okay, this Abel's hitting me on the head. I've got to listen to this album again. I got to listen to Master of Puppets 20 times within a day. I got to meet my quota, whatever it might be, maybe something newer, but you kind of catch my drift. For me, maybe it was like Maiden, Power Slave, or Caught Somewhere in Time, and I got to just listen to that over and over again. But yeah, like these days, I listen to so much, and I'm like, have I neglected something? Then I start to feel guilty. Eric, don't feel guilty, man. You're listening. You're supporting your bands. You're listening to what you like. So there's no reason to get silly about that. But yeah, Pale Horse and Jim Jones, Cowards Parts 1 and 2, those are really good from Chevelle. Catatonia, I thought it would be higher. It's number 5 for me, Nightmares of Extensions of the Waking State. Such a long title for an album. It's a good album. I did expect a heavier release by Catatonia. So while I know we have another podcaster on the Metal Pit who it's a 10 for him, it is not a 10 for me. I do think Jonas's vocals, he's just never sounded better. He sounds great. I saw those guys live in 2017 at the 930 Club. So happy that I made it there. My GPS crapped out on me, and I don't know DC like the back of my hand. So I was like, Brian, I'm not sure if we're going to make it to the show. But I got saved, and we made it there. And yeah, man, Jonas sounds as good as he does on that album, on older albums, as he does live. I will say it's a good, not great album, but Temporal is arguably my favorite song of this entire year. There is one Dream Theater song that's right there with them, but Temporal is just so damn catchy, and man, the chorus just packs a wallop. It's got these really heavy guitars. It's got these proggy synths behind it. Jonas has these like nice vocal layers. He doesn't overdo it with the vocal harmonies. It could be easy for them to get away with. He sounds so good. Lilac is great. What's the other one? Is it in the end of? The last track is pretty phenomenal. So it's a really good album, man. I love Catatonia. I thought there was a chance that this one or my next album were going to be number one this year. They didn't quite get there. Solid release. As much as I like progressive music, and I would categorize Catatonia these days as progressive doom metal, because they definitely have some pretty somber lyrics, and it's really definitely write in primarily minor keys, minor tonalities. It's a good album. It's proggy. I wish it was a little bit heavier in places. Number 4, Volbeat, God of Angels Trust. The lead singer calls a goat, which I see what he's saying now if you look at each word, G-O-A-T. Really good album. By a Monster's Hand was the first single. And I could wager that Metallica fans would love it because it has this nice kind of mid-tempo chunkiness to it. Great riff, man. The drums are ridiculous. Not like technically, but he's just going with his floor tom with some of the double bass. I just love it, man. It's just got so much like just the energy, man, that just builds in that song. And then it kicks into this main riff. And I'm like, you know what? I think James Hetfield would definitely give his seal of approval for the chunking, for the riffing on here. Great album, beginning to end. Devils Are Awake. Man, one of the best opening tracks on any album in 2025. I have no reservations there. Even like the more commercial stuff. What is it? Acid. I want to say it's Acid Rain. Yeah. I like the whole album, man. It's really good. I knew following up, the last two albums were actually very diverse. But Servant of the Mind is a definitely more metallic release. This is a good one because they mix it up a little bit more. It's heavy. It's catchy. What's the... There are a lot of tracks off here. It's hard for me to choose my favorite on here. But there's definitely some wicked double bass on track 4. And I guess the thing is with Volbeat... Now, John, you might know this. You might not. But the lead singer has a side death metal project. I've never checked it out. I'm not the big death metal like fan, but since it's Volbeat, I probably should give it a spin. It's the lead singer of Volbeat, sorry. And then there's other band members, but he has a side death metal project and I'll have to check it out. I don't recall now what they're called. Have you ever checked it out, John? Have you ever checked them out? Or
I myself am inherently not a Volbeat fan. So honestly, I had no idea he was even in a side project.
Yeah, they're a polarizing band. Yeah, they're a polarizing band. You either love them or you dislike them or hate them. But Demonic Depression, I think musically you would like them. It's clean vocals. He does definitely have his own sound, which vocally, which that's why you love him or hate him. But Demonic Depression, just check out the track, both of you. I know, Blake, you're not a big fan. You like some of the music, not so much the vocals. But the double bass and the guitar riffing, and they played it live. I don't know how the hell I forgot to mention I saw Volbeat this year. I guess I was focused on the Dream Theater show. But Volbeat was really impressive. I thought they could add better opening acts, but I guess that's another conversation. But yeah, Demonic Depression was massive. Oh my God, it's so heavy. Double bass going throughout, the riffing, it's steady 16th notes with palm muting, single note riffing, vocals, man. And they somehow, like, the verses are pretty aggressive, but the chorus is so stinking catchy. I'm like, all right, man, Volbeat's one of the few bands that just can pull this off. But yeah, great album, man.
Sweet, the death metal group is called As in Hell, and that's all one word.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that name. Yeah, I was thinking I had, but I hadn't heard that name. Jonas from Catatonia, the lead singer, he also has a death metal side project too. They're called Bloodbath. That name I do know.
Ah, yeah, I know Bloodbath. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I've never heard them, but I guess another band I've been meaning to check out. Since Jonas from Catatonia is in it, I probably won't like it, but I would give it a spin anyways. Moving on to number three. These guys are my surprise pick out of the whole list. And you know what? They're to blame for me being less progressive and certainly less metal this year. Obviously, you got a lot of ears under my belt in those genres, especially the hard rock and metal side of things. But Tuesday the Sky, it's Jim Matthews, the former composer and guitar player from Fate's Warning. It's his, I wouldn't call it a new project at this point. This is their third album. But here they use soundscapes, a lot of clean guitar parts. The opening track does have some really high gain. He plays Paul Reed Smith guitars, which I'm hoping to buy one of those in 2026. They're phenomenal guitars. They are not inexpensive guitars, but his guitar tone is some of the best. He's got some really nice lead guitar playing. I reviewed this album also on the Metal Pit. And I don't say this lightly, and I paused after I wrote this. And I actually wrote the album review at a Starbucks, which is amusing because I figured I would have been highly distracted just by all the noises. They play music there. Lucky for me, I had my earbuds in, and I was just pecking away, typing away on the keyboard there, listening to the album. But there are some really nice guitar melodies. It's not flashy at all. But he has a bit of a David Gilmour-esque sound to him. Nobody's ever going to be David Gilmour from Pink Floyd. That's just, Pink Floyd's one of those bands like a Led Zeppelin, like a Black Sabbath, Rolling Stones, Beatles. You name the impactful, iconic legends. He won't be a Gilmour, but it's just his note selection. He doesn't try to do too much. He knows what sounds good to his ear. He goes with it. He knows what he's capable of. And man, he does a hell of a job. And the album is, it's ambient. It's for the post-rock that I've explored, and I've added probably 12 bands in the last 6 months. So I'm in over my head with all the music I've been listening to. And I've been going back and I've been listening to some older Black Label Society, older Who Was Exodus, older Sabotage. But a lot of this post-rock stuff, Animist is like a band I started listening to. So now I'm going to get sidetracked. But yeah, like Tuesday the Sky, I have to blame them because, or really blame Spotify, because that algorithm that Spotify uses, and from what I've heard from people, they're hit or miss, and some people are down on it. And from what I've read, like Spotify, apparently the algorithm plays only, they play it safe, and they only play artists that they think you will like. And I tend to disagree. Some of it I do see. So, like, I'll have Volbeat playing, and okay, more Volbeat comes up. That's definitely safe. Metallica comes up. But then, like, 3 Days Grace will come up, and I'm like, they're like alt hard rock. They're certainly not Volbeat. Then, whatever, Hinder will come up. I'm like, no, I don't like them. Evanescence will come up. I'm like, okay, I like Evanescence. I can see there's some heavy guitars behind there, but there's like somebody like a front person with definitely a pronounced voice. They have a range, so I could see that. But Tuesday in the Sky, they definitely opened the doorways up. Them in Spotify came across like Hubris is one of my favorite new bands. I mentioned it to Blake, sent him a couple songs. It's not something like most of my friends are going to. A, it's instrumental. These guys are from Switzerland. They definitely have their own sound, but I love the layers because you'll hear these like strumming, clean, glossy guitar parts, this nice laid down rhythm section. Hey, I can hear the drums and the bass guitar together. Hey, this is, imagine that. It's refreshing from time to time. But then, boom, they'll kick on this high gain. I'm like, where the bleep did that come from? And I'm like, I love it, though. I'm like, you'll still have that glistening, clean guitars just bouncing around, ping-ponging through your headphones or earbuds. But then there's, boom, this deep, heavy-ass guitar riffs and C or whatever they're tuned to. Maybe they're playing. Sounds like it could be a 7-string here or there. But that's where, like, bands like Hubris, We Lost the Sea. There are actually many other bands. But I got to think, like, Tuesday the Sky and Spotify. But Tuesday the Sky, that album, and I should probably mention the album title in case anybody's interested. So it's Indoor Enthusiast is the name of the album. Okay, it's pretty amusing. The album cover's not very friendly looking, but the music within is excellent. Beginning to end, it's great. Memento Mori has, oh my gosh, the tension, these awesome, like, clean melodies. Then there's some other beautiful moments, and I'm like, I never would have used that adjective with any, like, metal or maybe even progressive influences, but with some of the post-rock stuff, I can see some of these kind of beautiful, nice musical arrangements that are, like, really stay with you. There's definitely a little bit more experimentation with percussion, and so Jim Matthews does a lot of the programming, all the programming that you hear, some of the percussion, some of the electronics behind it. So it's not just guitar. There are definitely soundscapes there, other instruments, some bass guitar. There is live drumming on 3 of the tracks, and they sound good. But yeah, it's an excellent album. I'll probably listen to it actually after this podcast. Moving on to number 2. A band that Blake and I have known for many years, and I'm sure John's aware of them. I don't know if it's really in his wheelhouse, but Helloween, German's finest, the pioneers of power metal, giants and monsters. Love the album beginning to end. Blake's, hey, do you want to review the album? And I do feel guilty. I haven't kept up with them as much as I would have liked. I like what I've heard. I was always a bigger Michael Kiske fan vocally, but the other vocalists have certainly warmed up to me. I know Kai tried his thing back in the heyday, Walls of Jericho. That was such a landmark album, and it influenced so many musicians in the UK, really in Europe and in the States. But yeah, Giants and Monsters, oh my gosh, the hooks on this album are just huge. Tokyo is a really good tune. That was like the last single before they released the album. This is Tokyo is the full title of the song. But yeah, like the two songs that break the 7-minute mark are really the ones that stay with me. The album beginning to end, though, is really strong, man. I had to give it some thoughts. I was like, does this top who I'm going to talk about at number 1? And I like they mix it up. Like vocally, they have the 3 vocalists. Musically, it's not all super fast. Like some of the power metal bands, like your Sorry Hammerfall, some of your bands that like just have a lot of that steady, really fast snare with this. With the synths, they mix up the tempos a lot better. I even like the ballad on there. We Can Be Gods, it's a good song. It legit, like, I don't skip it. Like, I could see where some fans are like, hey, this is slow. This isn't power metal. It's not fast enough, but they mix it up. But I gotta say, Universe and Majestic are 2 of Helloween's, like, better songs in the last, I'd probably say, 3 or 4 albums. They're epics. They both eclipse 7 minutes. They're interesting. Majestic really builds things up, and then they go into this hyperdrive, really fast 16th note, great riff. Got this nice dive bomb solo, and Michael Kiske goes into his, man, if you close your eyes, hey, is this Keeper of the Keys? It's awesome, man. It's a little bit nostalgic, but choruses on that track in Universe are excellent, man. I'd probably say Universe, of course, has a slight edge. Musically, Majestic gets me more, but the whole album, a little is a little too much. So I heard that on, of all stations, like on Sirius XM, It was Channel 41, like Turbo, which is more, it's the modern hard rock heavy metal bands. So more of your like Slipknot, who we talked about him earlier, like you mentioned with the lead female singer, Spirit Box. Like you'll hear more stuff like that on there than the guys that wear the, that do the face paint. They're more extreme. They're touring. Blake, you had mentioned the one girl's like, why don't you guys play their music more? But they're like, they're on there. I'm drawing some blanks on a few of the bands, but yeah, it's more modern metal, but I was like, wow, a little is a little too much. But yeah, they had a couple guest DJs on there. So they were playing like some of their influences. So like, okay, this is interesting, but super catchy tune, man. Really good. We Can Be Gods is awesome as well. Number one for me, isn't a shock to Blake. Probably after hearing me talk today on today's podcast, probably shouldn't be a shock to John as well. But Parasomnia, Dream Theater. This is Dark Dream Theater. And I feel like Blake and I are kind of on the same wavelength. It's not the super ballady Dream Theater. Although the ballad on here, or Bend the Clock, is, woo! Man, it's one of James LaBrie's finest, I'd say, in the last 15 to 20 years. And that outtake solo, oh my God. Oh my man, I got goosebumps. Petrucci is playing with so much feel. And then he just starts turning on the afterburners. It's a bit Gilmore-esque for the first maybe 16 to 24 measures. But man, he just cranks it up. There's so many great songs. And the album, while it's not truly a concept album, Portnoy did say that it has to do with like night terrors and nightmares, sleepwalking, things like that. Dead Asleep's a scary. Ooh, the lyrics. Blake covered the lyrics of that one when we did our Parasomnia podcast. But it's quite a nightmare come true there. But Dead Asleep is one of those songs. I like the whole album. I know some people are hot and cold about an album starting off with an instrumental, but In the Arms of Morpheus is a great one. I really like it. It honestly, it has a new wave of British heavy metal feel. It's got that triplet vibe to it. But Petrucci's wielding an 8-string guitar on that one. Oh, man. You can definitely feel the ceiling shake on that one if you turn it up enough. But I really like how they open with that. But getting back to Dead Asleep, man, it's got this super heavy riff, man. And he hits these harmonics, which Blake had mentioned before. I think Black Label Society, definitely Zakk Wylde, but it's deeper. And, man, LaBrie sounds great. John Myung early on in the song with the intro. Ah, it's such a great song. And then the solo section is certainly some ear candy. The Shadow Man Incident, you want an 18-plus minute epic? They got you covered as their outro, man. Midnight Messiah, I guess I can let Blake talk about that one. That's a really great up-tempo, catchy, very heavy and thrashy, but proggy as well. Yeah, great album beginning to end. Night Terror was the first single off the album. And it's like one of those songs where it's like, this could have been like one of those kind of B-sides, if you will, with Mike Portnoy to some earlier Dream Theater, Black Clouds and Silver Linings. It has that kind of vibe to it. And they played that one live, and it blended well with the rest of the set list. It's a really good tune. Starts off a bit slow, but then it gets into this frenetic feel with Petrucci kind of bringing up the rhythm. Portnoy with the double bass. Great song. The middle section is ridiculous. It's what sets Dream Theater apart, man. Great album. I would say if you like your metal proggy with an edge, a bit dark lyrically, Parasomnia is right up your aisle. Yeah, definitely my favorite release of the year. Yes, it came out in February, but I've still been listening to it along with all the other 20-plus albums I've been listening to. And no, I'm not exaggerating. There's just so much music out there for all of us. That's the beauty of it. So that's my top 10.
Okay.
Blake, have the microphone.
Now, all the Prague fans will leave, but death metal fans are hopefully still here. So, John, let's hear your top 10. I know half of them, I think, are on their top 10.
Yes, sir. We'll try and keep this short and sweet. Number 10, I got a Revocation, New Gods, New Masters, technical death metal from, I believe, your neck of the woods, Eric. I think they're from Virginia. The fans can correct me if I'm wrong. The thing about tech death is that it can get crazy with all the progressions and the riffs.
Right.
Yeah, 30 riffs, none of them repeat. Revocation isn't like that, man. They're musically very complex, but the songs are catchy and they're memorable. And that's, I think, the genius of the band. is that they're still accessible. I use the word digestible a lot. Excellent release, rock solid. And number nine, I've got Cytotoxin from Germany, technical death metal band. Guitar work is over the top. It's absolutely stellar. For fans of Dying Fetus, if you haven't heard Cytotoxin yet, this band is for you. They are incredibly intense. For number eight, I've got the latest release from Dark Angel. This is cool because it was a sort of a renaissance year for thrash metal. You've had the releases from Testament and from Coroner, and Hyrax had a new release this year. Extinction Level Event is the name of the album, and it probably would have been my number one for this year. I do have one gripe about it. Unfortunately, it's a really big gripe. I don't like how Ron's vocals were recorded in the mix. To me, they sound really boomy and garbled, which sucks because I think Ron is a hell of a singer. I know firsthand he's a hell of a performer. So I think when they mixed that, they should have done his vocals a little more justice. The guy's awesome. But aside from that, it's an excellent album. Up next, I got Cancer, Inverted World, Meat and Potatoes Death Metal. Nothing to pick at. Cancer really hasn't changed a whole lot stylistically over the years. And that's okay, because some days all I want is meat and potatoes death metal. Got a couple of standout tracks, including 39 Bodies and Test Site, which are probably two of my most played songs of the year. Even though this was an earlier release, I think it was April. Up next, we got Benediction, Ravages of Empires. Again, Benediction, you know what you're always going to get with them. They're another, I say, meat and potatoes death metal band. But the songs are catchy, they're memorable, they've got a really heavy groove in that UK death metal style. Longtime fans will love it. Dave Ingram's one of my favorite death metal vocalists. And for people who say they don't like death metal because they don't like the vocals and then turn around and listen to Janis Joplin, sorry, I got nothing for you, but Dave Ingram's the man. His vocals always have a certain driving cadence to him. It's almost like another rhythm instrument in there. He's unique. He's one of a kind. Coming in at number five, the Burning Witches with Inquisition. Again, if you like Doro Pesh and Warlock, if you like 80s Judas Priest and Dio, Burning Witches is the band for you. They're a favorite of mine when I want to hear some pure heavy metal. Interesting side note, they actually did a cover of Holy Diver on one of their early albums.
Ooh, nice. I got to go find it. Thanks for that.
Yeah, it's great. It's not off the Dark Tower. I believe it was the previous album. Might have been Hex and Hammer. I could be wrong, but it's in there. For number four, Inhuman Condition, Mind Trap. Rock solid effort from this band. For the Florida death metal guys, you'll love it. It's Terry Butler. He's one of the icons, one of the original death metal guys. If there was a Mount Rushmore of death metal, Terry Butler's on it because he's played in every Florida band that ever existed since the 80s. Think about Inhuman Condition. There are studio bands and then there are live bands. And Inhuman Condition is a live band. You might listen to this album, you think, all right, it's standard Florida death metal, no big deal. And then you go see them live and they're a whole other animal, man. They just explode on the freaking stage. They're great. And having met the guys twice, gotten pictures with them, can't say enough good things about the guys. They're very humble, very appreciative of their fans, very generous with their time as well. So those guys, Jeremy and Terry and Taylor, are just awesome. Favorites of mine for sure. Number three, Blackbreed 3, which again is, it's a masterpiece. It really is. Again, I don't like it quite as much as the first two, but the songs are well crafted. There's a lot of instrumental sections, a lot of soundscapes and atmospherics to go along with the blasting and the crazy, crazy guitar riffs. It's typical Blackbreed, but it's a little bit more evolved. So for me, I think I need to spin it a few more times. As much as I enjoy it, it'll probably grow on me, but just not quite as fast as the first two did. The first two caught me so much more quick, but I do really enjoy this album. Obviously, it's number three on my list. Number two, Coroner, Dissonance Theory. Again, like I said earlier, there's a little bit of everything for everybody on this album. It's extremely well-written. It's extremely well-rounded. And it goes from the crazy technical thrash to more ambient type stuff. Like I said, it's very moody in spots. It's excellent. I think for them, it is a magnum opus, if you will, and a culmination of everything that they've done over the years. And and just done even a little bit better, if that's possible, which Carter's excellent. It's hard to top anything that they've done. A shout out to those guys. And then, of course, I've got my surprise number one album of the year, Castrator, Coronation of the Grotesque. It's well-crafted, extremely well-crafted for me. It's about as perfect of a pure death metal album as you could possibly get. It's comparable, I think, to my last year's album of the year, which was Manual Manic Procedures from 200 Stab Wounds. It's on that level. Production isn't quite as slick. It's a little more dirty, but that's okay. The rawness of the sound really suits it. And yeah, it's just in your face. It's brutal, but it's catchy. They actually did a cover of an Exodus tune on there. I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. Metal Militia or something. I'm not an Exodus fan, so I don't. It never didn't really stick in my mind, but it was an excellent cover. It was well done. But the original tunes are where they shine. They're just excellent songwriters. And shout outs to Robin and Carolina, who founded the band. You've got a damn good thing going. Let's keep it going. And Castrator, Coronation of the Grotesque, AOTY, baby.
Okay, I'm trying to find that song. Oh, Metal Command was the song.
Metal Command, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. They did a great job with it. Like I said, I'm not an Exodus fan, and I like it.
Yeah, I should check that out, because I don't think I've heard them before, but I don't think I really listened to that album. Okay, so there's with you two guys, you got a big difference in bands, obviously.
Keeps things interesting, right?
Yeah. And then John with his death metal, mostly death metal and classic metal, whatever. But anyway, so it's interesting. We could have had two other writers and then it'd be totally something even different too. So that's the good thing about it.
You'd have to make it a two-part episode.
Yes, we went long again.
Seriously.
We went long again. But anyway, it's for the end of the year. So yeah, so I guess that's a podcast. So if you want to see the top 30 total, like I said, check Instagram. I'm posting them there. But here you got to hear the top 10 here and hear the top 10 of our two writers. And so we're going to say, I never did say, I guess I could say Merry Christmas, even though it's a few days gone past now.
There you go.
I can say Merry Christmas. Donald Trump says I can say it. And Happy New Year to everybody. I will probably get this posted before New Year, I think. Anyway, Happy New Year to everybody. Please keep listening to the podcast, rate and review us, tell us what your favorite albums of the year are. And hey, if you want to be a writer on a metal, heavy metal website, please send me a message, because we need more writers. And so check out our website, www.themetalpit.org. And please, if you're interested, send a message, listen to the podcast, like I say. And thanks everybody for listening, and we will talk to you again soon. Bye.